Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 26 for January 24th, 2010. Ich bin ein Googler. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Picture yourself on a phone call sharing and explaining something visual with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/TWiG. It's time for TWiG, This Week in Google, the show that covers all of the latest news from not only the Google, but from the cloud. Joining us now from Germany, where he is... are you there for the G7 summit? What are you there for?
Guten Abend. No, I'm here for a conference called DLD, run by Burda, which is the big publisher in Germany. And it's really quite a good conference every year. So here I am. Then I go on to Davos, where I hope to call in next week.
Wow, that's exciting. Jeff Jarvis, jet setter, blogger at BuzzMachine.com, journalist guru. And that's, I'm sure, why you go to conferences like this. Is the scene the same in Germany? Well, I'll ask you that in a second. But first, let's say hi to Gina Trapani, who's also here. Another proto-blogger, founder of lifehacker.com. She blogs these days at smarterware.org as well as Lifehacker. And
howdy.
Has a crushed cup from a submarine.
Yes.
That was cool.
It was pretty cool.
Gina was part of a, I don't know why the Navy did this, but they invited a bunch of bloggers to go on a submarine.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm so jelly. And then you must have gone out because you wouldn't have a crushed cup.
Yeah, we went out and we dove down about 600 feet down. So, I mean, not only am I one of the few, you know, civilians who have ever gone down and out on a submarine, but I'm one of the few women because women don't serve on submarines. So it was pretty, pretty exciting.
Wow, that's neat.
I think there was a Jerry Lewis movie about that, wasn't it?
A woman on a submarine?
Something like that.
Wasn't it a pink? It was like a pink submarine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
God, I wish you hadn't dredged that memory up.
Who should play you?
I'm thinking Ava Gabor for the I've been on an active duty sub before, and they cover up everything so you can't see it. I mean, they have hoods that they put over everything, and they never contemplated taking you out to sea. So that's a big change for the Navy. That's kind of
it was huge. It was huge. We saw everything. I mean, I had a video. I was in the control room while we were doing the dive, and I had a video camera going. And they said to us, hey, we'll let you know if something's classified and we don't want you to take a picture. But I got tons of pictures and videos. It was kind of amazing. They were really open, much more open than I thought they'd be.
It just shows the power of the blogger that these groups are aware of the great PR value of taking a few, you know, people, because it used to be, they always joke about bloggers, oh, it's some fat guy in the living room with a neck beard and his jammies, you know, and it's really changed the attitude towards blogging.
Definitely.
That's great. I think it's right, too. It's correct. So, and what is the German attitude towards the end of the newspaper industry, Jeff? Uh-oh, Jeff, you're sitting on your mute button.
Hello. Am I there?
Yeah, it's back.
Okay. It's getting rough here because they're trying to go after Google. And there are those who are smart in this industry who are saying that's a stupid thing to do. And there are those who are now kind of giving up and are trying to figure out what's what. So now we've had the German government going after Google for antitrust, which I think is absurd, but that's started by the publishers. Publishers are threatening to pull out of Google. It's... A bit of swords. What's going to happen this week, Dave Drummond from Google, who's the chief counsel, is going to be here at this DLD conference with the top publishers, including Burda and Axel Springer and others. And I'm told that maybe there might be some conciliatory talk, but we'll see.
Neelie Kroes is back. It's kind of interesting. She was the European Commissioner for Competition and was the one who went after Google and Microsoft and others, and Intel, too, I believe. Then she retired, and now she's being invited back to run technology, to be the commissioner of technology. So if Google felt a sigh of relief when Neelie retired, I think she's back. I don't, you know, one of the reasons that they interviewed her, one of the reasons that they asked her to serve as the technology commissioner is because she's pro net neutrality. She's got, it seems like she's got some pretty, maybe it's pro consumer ideas to the detriment of big companies like Google and Intel and Microsoft.
Well, they have, you know, they have different attitudes in Europe about privacy than we have in the U.S. I wrote a column in The Guardian a week ago about what I said was the right to link. And if you think about it, what's public is public. And we in the public have a right to comment on it and link to it and talk about it. And if you try to take away that right to talk about what's in public, if you enable Google, if you tell Google they can't do Street View because you might catch somebody going into a opium den.
Right.
What happens when a journalist catches a politician right. going into that opium den?
It's tricky, and isn't it?
It's very tricky, and the kind of knee-jerk response about privacy and you know, against America and against big companies, I'm not saying they're all anti-American, but there is a bit of a knee-jerk response. It takes Google up like tuna in the net.
Right. Unfortunately. You know, that came up in Secretary of State Clinton's speech on Thursday on Internet Freedom. She was saying, we can't have anonymity on the Internet. And then somebody quite reasonably stood up and said, yeah, but what about whistleblowing and, you know, battered women? And she said, well, and then she said, well, you're right. That's why this is difficult. What was the reaction to Hillary Clinton's speech on Thursday? Did you see anything while you were there?
Not enough, from my view. I mean, I left Friday to come here, so I didn't maybe see much. I wanted to listen into it. I didn't have a chance to, but I wanted more reaction to it. The only thing I saw was the Chinese government of rubbing their nose and saying, how dare you criticize us?
What did you think of the speech, Gina?
I missed it. I'm feeling.
I watched it.
Bad
I tried to watch it. Well, it was morning time, our time. It was, you know, like breakfast time, and I watched it as I was getting the kids ready. And it was a very, very bland political speech, I thought. But if you read between the lines, it was a little bit of saber rattling, and I can understand why the Chinese government was a little perturbed by it. Because I mean, she called out China. She said, you know, we can't be hacking our companies. And it was interesting, Jeff, because the Chinese response didn't come from a high-ranking Chinese official. It came from a guy who was like the director of the Online News Association in China.
Really? I love that you're doing criminology now, Leo.
Well, it is criminology.
It is. It's great, yeah.
So, I mean, it was on Xinhua, which is the official Chinese news agency. So it was, you know, if you do the criminology, well, they didn't want to have a high-ranking official say it. But they wanted somebody to say it, and they certainly provided the channel, which gave it the official imprimatur. Yeah, it's interesting. It's like they're testing the waters, and really what he said was, it's not the U.S.'s business; it's no other company's business how China runs its politics, runs its country, and runs its internet. And he said the U.S. has no right to criticize us for how we run our internet. The implication being, well, look at how, you know, look to your own. The mote in your own eye, or whatever it is, whatever the biblical quote would be.
Well, that's just the issue. Is it their internet? Is it our internet?
Right. Whose internet is it?
Back to that idea that it's no one's internet.
Right.
Rebecca McKinnon, who covers China very well from her blog, talked about the idea of the need for an internet constitution. And I thought about that. I was going to blog about it. I didn't.
Whew.
And I thought, I'm not sure I want a constitution, but I do want a Bill of Rights. And I think at some point we have to start to codify what we think are the rights of the internet. John Perry Barlow wrote a wonderful, rousing call to people of the earth on behalf of the internet, saying that the governments should stay out of it. Quite some time ago, and it was actually written in Davos in the 90s, and it was kind of the Declaration of Independence of the internet. And that took us to the point of understanding this is very different. But we also do need, I think, some codification of our rights.
Well, it's also caused some real infighting. I know at the EFF, where Barlow is a founder and a member of the board, because on the other hand, if the government doesn't get involved to protect net neutrality, who does?
So, it is a form of regulation, right?
It's a mess. It's a very, you know, difficult thing to talk about. So a couple of stories in the Googleverse this week, a big one, and I don't know if it's just a rumor Business Week had it or if it's really going to happen. My sense is it's true, is that Apple's talking with Microsoft to replace Google as the search engine on the iPhone. They want to have Bing in there.
Boo.
Yeah, no kidding, boo.
Yeah. So for a company who's so dead set on making the user experience absolutely perfect, I mean, does Bing really provide the best search experience out there? I mean, this is clearly, if this is true, this is clearly
it's politics.
You know, a competition thing. Politics. Yeah. Sure.
This could be, you know, for a long time, Eric Schmidt served on the Apple board, and there was clearly this nice, friendly, collegial relationship. And then it's the phones that have finally got them at each other's throats, I think.
Yep, absolutely.
And, you know, the lack of multi-touch in the Droid and now the Nexus One has to be because of Apple. Whether Google's afraid Apple will sue them over the patent or Apple asked them to, but it has to be about Apple. And it's a big liability on the Nexus One not to have multi-touch. And then Apple's shot across the bow saying, we're going with Bing. That's not going to make anybody happy. That's terrible.
There's going to be a revolt. If they try to do that in any,
it might be good for Google. It might be one of those things that pushes people away from the iPhone towards the Nexus One.
Don't you love Google being the underdog?
Yeah, not for long. So, are you still? You're in Germany. Are you using the Nexus One? I mean, it's a GSM phone. It's a good phone for
Germany. Well, nice. Here's the problem. I have a UK SIM with Orange. I put it in when I landed this morning. And it does phone only, no data.
Oh.
I was with Dan Dubno, who does Gadget Off, and he had his T-Mobile SIM from the U.S., phone, no data.
Oh.
That's a real problem.
That's funny, because T-Mobile's Deutsche Telekom.
Yeah. And for being here until Tuesday morning, it's not worth it for me to buy an on-demand. I'll probably, in Switzerland, I'll buy a Swisscom SIM and try that. But no, right now, the hotel Wi-Fi is €20.
Yikes.
I'm not going to sign up for that.
No.
So, no, I'm not using it.
Well, and here's the sad thing. And the iPhone would have worked fine. I mean, you would have had to.
It does. I have it. I have it with me.
Oh, good.
I have not abandoned my iPhone. I am loyal.
You got a reason. And now you have a strong reason. I mean, that's a big one. I thought one
That is a big one. Yeah. I thought it would work. But even if the iPhone searched Bing by default.
Yeah, then what? You know, I put the Bing app on my iPhone, and it's not bad. I don't think people would. To be honest, most people probably wouldn't even notice it. And where would it be? It would be in the browser? It would be in Safari? Is that where we're talking? Or is it phone-wide? I guess there is a phone-wide search that pulls up a Google result.
Yeah, I mean, there's the Google app on the iPhone, which is better, ironically, than the Google phone.
Right.
Oh, really? Do you think?
I think so. What
makes it better?
Just because it's kind of all there. So I can get from the Google app in the iPhone, I get maps and search and news and images and translation and everything.
Oh, Gina, you're going to have to school Mr. Jarvis, I'm afraid. That's just sad.
But the irony is that Google didn't do as Google didn't do as good a job with its own app in Android as it did in the iPhone.
That's because it's not an app. It's built into the Android. Jeff, you've got to press that little search button in the lower right-hand corner.
Okay, you tell me, how do I easily get to news on the Android?
Well, look, I did that. I just typed in pizza by pressing the search button. It finds phone contacts, yes, but it also has search maps for pizza. It has PizzaHut.com website. Search the web for pizza. More Google results. Let's see. Let's see if there's news. Wait a minute. Let's see. Here's Google. Three additional results. Let's see. Maybe you're right. Maybe there's not any pizza news. I should have said, you know, something more
newsy.
But that so you would get news right away in the.
Yeah. So if I go to the Google app, I get, you know, my apps: Mail, Calendar, Docs, Talk, Gmail, Calendar, Latitude, Docs, Talk, Tasks, Reader, Google 411, News, Book Reader, Notebook, Photos, Orkut.
No, I get all of that, too.
Where?
Well, it pulled up the Google page, that's why.
That's the difference.
Yeah. So it's not in the app, you're saying.
Yeah, that's the only thing, is I think that it's you know, if the irony to me of this is that Google didn't understand the power of its own brand and its services when it came to Android.
That's interesting.
Hmm.
I don't think they have a Google app. Do they have an app on here?
No, they don't.
No, because it's all kind of incorporated.
Yeah, I think it's in there, but we don't know where it all is.
Yeah, I mean, besides the widget, you know, the search widget, which comes on the home screen.
I turned that off because it does the same functionality, as far as I can tell, as just pressing the search.
As pressing the search, yeah, the magnifying glass, right? And it takes up a lot of space.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I don't search news very much on my phone, I guess.
Yeah, Jeff's a more newsy kind of guy than you and me.
Yeah, he's a news guy. We love him.
He does the local search great, though. I mean,
it does. The other problem I'm having, since I'm doing my Android, my Nexus One thing, is battery life has really sucked.
It takes some real management on the battery life. For one thing, I don't know how Gina leaves her motion wallpapers on, because that'll drain your battery in an hour.
I guess I don't stray far from home for very long.
Yeah, no kidding. But one thing you have to know is that black uses less power than white on an OLED screen. So if you have any interface that you can change to white on black versus black on white, do that'll hugely impact the power. So
the problem I have is my university office has crappy reception.
That could drain it. Yeah,
when it's trying to look for the antenna, that really drains it badly.
So another thing to do, and I leave this widget on all the time, and it usually is on, I think by default, is the wireless widget. You could disable some of these things. So whenever I don't need Bluetooth, I'll disable that. I'll turn off
GPS. But the thing I can't disable, which I want to disable, if I'm on Wi-Fi at my office, I want to disable the cell radio.
Oh, yeah, you can't.
There's no way to do that.
Well, yeah, you're right. I guess you have to go in airport mode. And then
you got your Wi-Fi back on. The only thing I'm told is you can tell it to go to 2G, but you think you want to be able to just turn off.
That's a good point.
You can't.
Yeah, that power control widget could use that.
It could be better.
It could be better.
Well, this is all good input.
Well, this all good. I've passed my return period, so I know.
You have.
So you're keeping it.
I'm going to blame you.
Jeff, I'll send you a check. Your money gladly refunded by Leo if you don't come along.
Jeff, do you like the pull-down window shade? The notifications?
Yeah, I've used that. I mean, I did this week, because of you guys, I did go about 4 days before I got on the plane to use the Nexus One pretty consistently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like the notifications. I think the notifications are one of the best features on here.
Yeah, it felt more comfortable. It did.
Yeah. So apparently, I'm told there is a widget that will turn off the cell radio. You just have to, I don't know if it must be a third-party widget.
Is that chat?
Yeah. I haven't seen it. Let me just see if it's in my widgets. I think one of the things that I like about it, and you hit the nail on the head last week, Jeff, when you said it's a phone for people like me and Gina who like to, geek around.
That was Gina's point, really.
Yeah.
Geeks versus sheep is the cruel way she put it.
Well, for geeks, it's really fantastic,
I was baiting folks with that headline.
I think that's true, though.
But although I said Android's for geeks. It is for geeks who want to take the time to really learn it and poke around and discover, that kind of thing. It doesn't have that instant grokkability that I think the iPhone has.
You could make it, though, if you were, I'll tell you what, if I were going to give this to my mom, I could set it up so it's identical to the iPhone with 16 icons on 5 pages, just the apps she wanted. Set the settings so she doesn't have to think. You could make it like the iPhone. The point is that you can get deeper than you can on the iPhone. And you don't, but I don't think you have to.
Well, the other problem is, and this will change over time, but I think you have to admit that the quality of the apps available is just simply better on the iPhone.
I would agree on that.
And I don't know when it's going to take over.
I think we're very close to an inflection point. I'm starting to see now more and more people do apps. I just got the Zagat Guide, for instance, which was something I used on the iPhone and missed on Android. It's out now. Foursquare's out. Gowalla's going to be out. Evernote is out.
Evernote is out.
Oh, it is. Oh, good.
I think a lot of, in fact, yesterday I went, I haven't used the iPhone in about a week and a half, and I turned on the iPhone just to see and look at the apps that I had on there and say, is there anything I really wish I had? And Mint, but you could still go to the Mint website. It's not the end of the world. There's some weird ones like the Sonos, which I use, the Sonos Zone Player, which is a speaker that uses Wi-Fi and has a wonderful remote for the iPhone, not available yet on Android. Audible.com is the biggest one for me. I don't get the Audible reader on here.
Well, if anyone can get it on there, you can.
Well, I'm pushing them. They say they're going to have it before mid-year. They are working on it. But I think we're very rapidly getting to the point where a lot of quality applications, there are now 3 very good, and a new one, Handmark's doing a new Twitter application. Twitteroid has gotten, I think, very... What do you use for Twitter, Gina? Are you using Seismic?
We're using Seismic, yeah. It's okay. It's not as good as Tweety. I think that Android really needs like a good, awesome, incredible
I'd revisit Twitteroid Pro.
I tried it. I tried it, Leo, but I'm sticking with Seismic in that comparison.
Seismic is simpler, but Twitteroid Pro has all the functionality, in my opinion, of any of the iPhone apps.
Gina, how much effort does it take to port an app from iPhone to Android? Is it a complete, just from scratch, rethink?
It's a completely different development platform. Yeah, it's totally different. From what I understand, I haven't done either iPhone or Android development, but it's a totally different
is
thing.
Is Android Java different. Or
Android is Java? Yes.
Java. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And iPhone is Objective-C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like Mac development on the iPhone.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it's a totally different thing. You can't reuse code or port code easily. And I just think the APIs are different.
On the other hand, most cell phone development was Java until the iPhone, so there probably is a lot of stuff code lying around that might be ported, just not from the iPhone. I don't know. There's a great bunch of news apps, Jeff. I have a whole page devoted to news. I've got three news widgets here. There's some good feeders. I use Feeder, F-E-E-D-R, for feed reading, and it's really great for that. Thomson, believe it or not.
Thomson is really good. Thomson Reuters is very good.
I think it's excellent, and it has built-in Delicious integration. So this is something I couldn't do easily on the iPhone. I can actually share a story to Delicious directly from the phone, as well as email, messaging, Twitter. That's really slick. So I've been very happy with the news situation on the phone. I read, and because the OLED screen's so good, I read a lot more news on the Nexus One than I did on the iPhone.
I'm waiting for a Kindle app for the Android.
Yeah, there's another one that's missing.
That's one I'd like to see for sure. Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
Well, that gets us to another story. Of course, Wednesday, Apple's going to announce the God tablet. And if they don't, there will be tomatoes thrown.
If Steve Jobs had any guts, he'd do it from Mount Sinai.
I have brought you the tablets. You know, he'd be cool if he came on stage with some big stone tablets and said, "What do you mean?"
With a big beard, Charles Houston, it'd be good. Yeah.
This is the tablet of which I was speaking. They better have a Rotten Tomato detector, though, as you go in, because I tell you, if they're not announcing a tablet, because this will upset everybody.
There'll be an uprising.
There will be an uprising. I did get an invite, so I will be there. We're going to do, in fact, full day coverage of it, because I believe. What are you laughing at?
Team coverage.
I call this, well, nobody else is going to do it, so I got to do it.
No, it's right. It's great.
I call it our obsessive compulsory coverage of the iPhone, tablet, rather. We're going to do it, start at 8:30 a.m. And continue coverage right through till 5 p.m. that day, because I'm of the opinion that there's a very good...
really screwed if nothing comes out.
Well, if nothing comes out, if it's iPod socks again, then I'm in deep, deep trouble. But then we'll have some good coverage
like
on...
really boring baseball game.
Yeah. No, I'm worse than that. A boring baseball game where it's raining. And that all you see is the tarp and some sad people in the stands going...
Amazing how those guys work so hard, isn't it, Gina?
Socks. They came out with socks. Actually, I'll never forget going to Cupertino for a Steve Jobs announcement, and he announced iPod speakers and iPod socks. And it was the most horrible feeling. But this, you know, that this is, in fact, they're still leaking stuff to the Times. The Journal today had yet another unnamed source from deep within Apple saying, you know, there's content deals. HarperCollins, I believe New York Times, I think television networks. I think this is going to be a very interesting device, and I think
that scares me a little, because I think with the New York Times going to its metered, you know, lovely Rita Metermaid this week, I'm afraid that we have media people thinking this is their great salvation. It is indeed the coming of the Messiah, and I think there's a lot of skewed thinking going on in media. Oh, that was good.
Steve with the tablets, by the way.
That's good.
That's a good one.
You know, I fear these content deals will be saying, okay, well, Jobs understands us, and he saved part of the music industry, and he'll save newspapers and magazines now.
Bull. I'm sure Steve would like them to believe that as he makes these deals. But, you know, I think people wised up because the record industry made the deal with Apple when they, iTunes. How much trouble could that cause us? And I think everybody's gone, we don't want to be the next record industry. But what choice do they have, Jeff?
No, none. Well, yeah, they have a choice. My argument is that in media now, content is a magnet that causes relationships. and you have to get the value out of the relationship. The idea of just selling content doesn't work anymore. Yeah. Sorry. And the cost of content with things like demand media is going down to nil. So the content business just ain't what it was, folks. Sorry.
Don't you, though, look, admittedly, it's not a savior, but don't you, though, look at a new channel? I mean, this is what Apple, this is, I'm sure, the offer that Apple is proffering to these companies. We can save you by providing a new channel that allows engagement, is easier to use, costs you less. There's no dead trees involved. We've got a monetization strategy. We've got
it's called the web.
Well, but iTunes, you could say, yeah, but look, iTunes transcends the web and controls the channel. And people do not buy music. I guess they do. They go to Amazon. But iTunes still is totally dominant in that sphere. And it's not exactly the web. It's just the internet.
It's the internet, right?
And it's because the iPod became a must-have.
Well, that's the
accessory.
That's the offer. That's the proffer. Yeah. Is we are making the next. We're making the iPod.
Are you
going
to carry
content.
A device just to read? You carry a device to listen, but actually, that device is now your phone, which you also use to read.
Right. So it's a big. It's a big device to carry around. Probably a very fragile device.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's portable.
I read my iPhone. Yeah. I read the New York Times on my iPhone. I read books on the iPhone.
Well, I think Apple's content to have you do that and a slate maybe in the living room where it replaces a TV, perhaps.
How big is that going to be?
Well, it's going to be 10.
And are we in a Betamax world where you know, well, you can read the New York Times in your slate, but you can't on your computer? That'd be absurd. No one's going to do that.
You don't think the Times will do that?
Well, I don't know what the Times is going to do these days, but that's playing to a very small, very limited audience.
It's very risky. It's risky.
High cost.
Yeah.
And don't forget, the Times made big, big deal out of its Times Reader on the web with Microsoft.
Yeah.
And I was consulting for them at the time at about.com, and I made fun of it, and I got in trouble for it. Well, so what? I got a reference to a reference to a reference. Somebody said, hey, maybe you didn't want to say that. Well, sorry, that's what I say. I'm going to say what I say. It didn't take off the world. The problem with this whole notion of the tablet is its editors thinking that it's going to let them regain their control of the experience. And the link has already broken.
It's too late. Too late for that.
It's too late. It's too late.
No, you're right. If that's what their hope is, that's not going to happen. And I don't think Apple can offer that. All they can offer is another channel, but not more control. So the question then is, okay, you're still going to get, people are, it's not, I don't think anybody, it would be foolish to close off the internet, but would it be bad to have the internet and something where they could control it better, control the experience?
But why? The link is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, you
the
like
problem.
The link, but what about.
Okay, but Leo, the iPod did not lead to us. We can buy an album on it, but it didn't strengthen the stature of the album, of the packaged music.
No, it killed it.
No, it killed
right.
it, yeah. Singles.
Same here. It's even worse because you don't link from song to song.
I see what you're saying.
Right? But you do link from article to article or piece to piece, and that kills the packaged experience.
Well, is the packaged experience all that they want? I mean, they cannot live on an article-by-article experience? Does that not work for them?
Well, the Times is going to go to the... Lovely Rita Metermaid.
That's not going to work.
No.
So,
but the idea is you hit so many articles in a month, then you get hit. And my argument about that, some people criticize me, but I said that it's cockeyed economics because they're charging their best customer. And in the internet is a relationship.
You're right. It's the
you have your relationship.
Yeah, you're right. The more they read, the more it costs. That's not what you want to do.
No, so the people that Rupert Murdoch
says that's a scarcity of resource model. It's a completely inappropriate model for an unscarce resource.
Can you go talk to them, Leo?
Yeah, that's treating it as if it's printed on dead trees. Oh, it's costing us more. No, it's not.
No,
but what do you do? You charge the guy who reads only one article, and then if you read five, you don't get you don't have to. What do?
No, you make it your job to try to get the best relationship you can. Here in Munich. I walked today by. I was with Baratunde Thurston. I'll tell you about that in a second.
Love Baratunde. We tried
and
to get
lunch today.
Yeah, we asked him to be on Twitter, and he said, "I can't. I'm on Munich." And I said, "Oh, I know where
you
are."
Join us.
Yeah.
So we went out. We had lunch today, and I said, "You've never been to Germany before," so I said, "You want to do it? You want to do the Wurst thing?" So we went to a Wurst restaurant and sat down, and he had Weisswurst, the white Wurst, And he ordered, I don't like it as much. I had the Nordenberger version. And he ordered a sauerkraut salad.
Fun.
And potatoes. And the Germans, they were sitting at group tables. The Germans looked at what he was eating and laughed. And finally, they explained to Baratunde that eating that all together would be like an Italian putting chocolate sauce on pasta. Sorry, I forget where I was.
I don't know, but I like it. Now you've made me very hungry. And I don't think chocolate sauce sounds so bad on pasta. So there. Which was the chocolate sauce and which was the pasta? Anyway, it sounds like fun. Give Baratunde my regards.
I said to say hello, Brian.
Yeah, yeah. So the publishers, I think, is the pitch for Apple. I think that's, and not just publishers of printed content, but television and networks and music. And I think that the argument from their point of view is, look, we're creating a new channel. You want to hop on before the train leaves the station. And I think these guys are going to jump.
What do you think the sales could possibly be of a tablet?
Well, that's the question. I mean, and by the way, this has got to be an expensive device. It can't be cheap. Unless,
so in addition to your phone, a smartphone,
right,
and to your laptop, what does the tablet really bring you? Gina, you lust after devices. Are you lusting after this?
I'm not. I mean, I have a netbook. I have a Kindle. I have my phone. I don't know. I'm still not clear about what the target audience is, what I'm going to do with this thing. So I'm going to keep this thing in my living room and watch it instead of my TV. Can I hook it up to my TV? Is this just going to be I can get shows on it? I don't know.
Let me give you my prediction and see if this would make it more compelling. What if it had Kindle-style free wireless, subsidized wireless, effectively? Uh-huh. So you never have to hook it up to a computer. It just gets shows. There's a $15 a month subscription to the top 5 shows on all the networks. So it's kind of your television subscription device. Yes, it hooks up to your TV. It's like an Apple TV in that sense. You can quickly hook it up to your TV or not, or you can carry it with you. You might watch it in bed because it's going to be a 720p, very gorgeous, small but very gorgeous screen. Big enough, I think, to watch it in bed, watch it in the kitchen. It's a reader, so your newspaper will also be on that. Your magazines will be on that in a form, a UI that only Apple can design that would make it as appealing as a paper. I think this is part of the problem the newspapers have to solve. Is what the Times is trying to solve with its application for Windows and its Air application was, how do you make an electronic reading experience comparable to the paper experience? Everybody loves the paper. You can scan it. You can turn the page. It's big. So if Apple can solve that, maybe give you something that is as usable as a newspaper. Mm-hmm. I think that's not a bad device, especially if the cost of the content subsidizes the cost of the device and the wireless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you have a browser on it.
No, you don't have a browser on it.
You don't have a browser on
it? No.
Oh, forget it.
Huh.
You might. I think this is not aimed at people who use browsers.
Oh, who's that, Leo?
I think it's a crossover device. I think it's a device aimed at people who don't have a computer.
Oh, how many? No, really, serious.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe that's a foolish idea. Yeah, she has a computer. Everybody has a computer.
So is this the Chrome OS play, the second computer, the secondary?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, but I think, maybe it has a browser. But the browser experience, the browser, it doesn't kill it because the browser experience is not going to be as good as a custom design interface for content.
You've all seen the video that Sports Illustrated did, and the argument against that is that they could do that today on the web.
Right. Well, in fact, look at these HTML5 examples we're now seeing, not just from YouTube, but other companies. They look great and they work in a browser. Maybe you're right. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not excited about the tablet. I'm probably not going to buy one unless Apple absolutely blows me away with the UI. I mean, this is the thing that I'm most excited about.
It's going to be a UI.
What are they going to do? Apple's UI, regardless of what a Google fangirl I am, Apple does some incredible work in terms of interface. So that's what I'm excited to see. But I'm not jonesing for a tablet. I have a netbook. I don't know. Maybe I'll change my mind. Hopefully, maybe they'll change my mind.
I think they're going for the netbook crowd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Problem is the netbook. One of the reasons the netbook succeeds is because it's $300, and there's no way this is $300.
And it's a keyboard.
And it has a keyboard. That's the thing. I mean, am I going to, type on this tablet?
I think the bet Apple's making, again, this is all tea leaf reading or criminology, but I think the bet Apple's making is that the keyboard's necessary for content creation. This is a content consumption device.
But, right.
There's the heart of it, right? We are all content creators now. Not necessarily to the whole world, but whatever we do, whether it's email or a video or a tweet or a whatever, you know, look at the frustration we all have had with the virtual keyboards on our phones.
Right.
And you know, many times I will think of something I want to tell somebody and I wait till I get to my computer to do it.
Yeah, me too.
We are all content creators now. That's the problem. There is no such thing, I think, for anybody as content consumption.
The problem is that you add the browser, you add the keyboard, suddenly you got a laptop.
Yeah.
And we already have that. So I guess that's your contention, Jeff, is that there's no market for this because we already all have laptops and there isn't. This is an imaginary market.
Well, that's where Google is seeing the world, obviously, that it's voice control.
Right.
When you get to voice control, then it obviates the need for the keyboard. I picked up a magazine at the airport. I forget which one it was. I can't give the credit. Arguing that handwriting is dead. There's no such thing as handwriting anymore. And I agree with that because I have the world's worst handwriting. And my, you know, my kids had to take keyboard early in life as a result. Well, is there a point at which the keyboard dies? If the keyboard dies, then yes, the tablet makes sense, except for the pocket problem with the size of it. And we're not there yet, though. Is that Apple's huge? You know, remember back, ladies and gentlemen, to the new...
the first tablet.
Gary Trudeau and making fun of the new...
Farm, yeah.
Right. And the notion of taking handwriting onto the computer just is never going to work. So will audio input work? Well, we're not there yet. Maybe someday. And who's going to be the better shot to do that? Google or Apple? Google has more samples.
Yeah, Google can own speech.
I think so.
I think Google already does. I use the voice. I think to me that's the killer kind of hidden feature in 2.1 and Android 2.1 and the Nexus is this speech everywhere.
Of course, Leo, you are a radio person who are very easy to understand.
It's
unlike
true.
I speak fast.
No, I think you do speak carefully and say things like, you know, that. But it works if you do that. I've been dictating emails and mostly text messages.
Really?
Very effectively. But you have to enunciate. The phone trains you. Because it doesn't work until you do it.
My teachers and parents tried, and as you can tell, they failed.
So what about the contention that Google's position in China now is far more risky than it realized? That Eric Schmidt might have been right that this is a mistake. To the point that these two handsets that were going to be announced in China, two Android-based handsets from Samsung and Motorola, are now delayed. And the contention that this is, you don't mess with the phone industry like that. These guys do not take kindly to delays in their handsets. And this could be disaster for Android going forward.
Well, the irony here is that the question I saw asked today is, will people in China buy Android phones without Google? Maybe it'll just have Bing on it.
And Sony Ericsson says they're going ahead anyway. I don't know how they get to, and Motorola and Samsung do not. But this is I'm sure that Google's smart enough to have had this conversation and looking at the consequences. They may have made a braver decision than even we realized.
You know, Android is so customizable. I feel like that they're going to be able to get around this. But even if they have to change the default search engine to Bing or Baidu or whatever, I don't know. I think that they're going to figure out a way to get around it and to release a phone that doesn't offend anyone.
I keep coming back to what Gina and Siva said last week here, that this was about Google protecting the cloud.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. But now, so you're saying, so will Google pull out? I guess is the first question.
I was taught years ago in negotiation, if you threaten someone and don't do it, then you're doomed forever.
And China has, in a way, I mean, admittedly a low-level official, but China has said it in a way, screw you, Google. So now it's Google's move.
Yeah, and Google, in a sense, pulls out. In a sense, it doesn't, that anyone can find Google.com through the mechanisms that's been talked about. The problem is they won't get the advertising revenue, but advertising is hard to sell in China.
Right. So maybe they're not losing that much. You think that it's not a big deal?
Now.
Yeah, but how is this going to go down? I mean, isn't Google just going to show uncensored results and then China blocks it?
No. I think what they said was that
they're
not
going to.
Yeah, they're going to try to get the law changed. If the law doesn't change, then they have to shut down because they're not going to break the law. Steve Ballmer at a conference on Thursday in Houston called Google's decision an irrational business decision.
He threw him under the bus, then he went forward and back and forward and back.
According to Forbes, Ballmer suggested that Google's decision to no longer filter out internet searches objectionable to the Chinese government was an irrational business decision. After all, Ballmer said, the U.S. imports oil from Saudi Arabia, despite the censorship that goes on there. Quote, the U.S. is the most extreme when it comes to free speech, said Ballmer, noting, however, that even the U.S. bans child pornography while France bans internet access to Nazi imagery. Interesting. But, you know, Steve has never held back from the opportunity to slime a competitor.
No.
And it's never really been, you know, I mean, come on, it's just Ballmer. There's no Kremlinology when it comes to Ballmer. What you see is what you get.
There was a link I didn't put up on the feed that I'm trying to find right now. I'll fail, but that maybe a Google operating system that looked at Google's censorship of things country by country. And it does raise a good point. You know, there's the Nazi stuff in France, and there's Scientology
and
stuff.
And Google
in the US.
And eBay and Yahoo and everybody go along with the Nazi filtering.
Right.
But I mean,
here it is. It's Google Blogoscoped. So in Google France, Google. Area 88 is out. In US, Xenu.net, which is Scientology. In Australia, the Aboriginal Encyclopedia Dramatica.
Wait a minute. Google filters out Xenu.net results in the U.S.?
It says here on Blogoscoped. Let me see here. Scientology sent Google a letter that complained about a particular page at Xenu as part of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act because it took what they said Scientologists say was their own copyrighted works.
Ah, so Google said over.
They disabled that. So, you know, the point is they're following local law. In Germany about the Holocaust, certain things, the Holocaust Lüge, the Holocaust lies is filtered. So
I guess that's what China's saying is you can't tell us what culturally we don't want to publish. You do it. Why can't we do it?
Right, but like we said, this isn't just about free speech. This is about the fact that they were being attacked.
They're hacking.
And I think that Google couldn't deal with the fact that they were a pawn, you know, that information stored in their servers that was getting, you know, the hackers were getting access to, the fact that they were available, that the hackers could get information about these people through Google services because they're available in China. Does that make sense? I didn't explain that well. But this is not about free speech.
Yes.
This is about the attacks.
That makes sense.
Yes.
So do you think then, Gina, that it was a mistake to raise censorship? I mean, part of the argument has been that this gave Google its virtue points back. But are you saying that muddied the waters, that this was instead, if they'd stuck with the cloud defense, they'd be better off?
I mean, I think the way that they handled it was fine. I feel like they were clear about the fact, like, we compromised up to a point, and then they, you know, they did this surveillance, that there were these attacks, and we can't stand to both compromise and deal with this kind of, you know, the attacks at the same time. So now we're not willing to compromise anymore. I think it was fine that they brought it up that way. I mean, but obviously it's not a free speech. I mean, if they felt that way, they would have done this, you know, 5 years ago. It was definitely the attacks. And for Ballmer to make these statements when, you know, Internet Explorer had one of the biggest, I mean, Google did them a favor.
It was IE's fault.
Yeah, I mean, really. Bad business decision.
No kidding.
Ever.
That's a very good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe if you would make your software more secure, we wouldn't have this problem. We
wouldn't have this problem, exactly.
I saw another link today in my search. I didn't put up a friend feed, but it said, you should update your Internet Explorer this way, that way, or just get rid of it. I do recommend just get rid of it.
Just get rid of it. Just throw it out. Well, that's what France and Germany said. They said, you cannot use it. Microsoft did patch that on Thursday, by the way, that bug anyway was fixed. You're listening to This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. He's in Munich right now for the Bilderberg Conference.
The DLD Conference at Burda.
Okay, got the name wrong, but what the hell?
Bilderberg sounds nice, though. It sounds like...
that's another one, I think.
We can put together tweets. Yeah, it's nice. I like that. Jeff Palmer will start that next week.
And he's off to Davos next week, which will be fun.
Yep.
Gina Terpani also here with her submarine crushed cup. And we're going to have more in just a bit, but I want to mention my friends at GoToMeeting from Citrix. GoToMeeting uses Citrix's top-of-the-line remote access to make it easier for you to meet. See, Jeff could have just stayed here and gone to the conference using GoToMeeting, saved himself thousands of dollars in airfare, and been more effective. We all have phone calls that we're on. We wish we could show the person something, whether it's the PowerPoint presentation or the spreadsheet or the website, or maybe collaborate on a document together. And this is what GoToMeeting makes so easy to do. You install it right now. In fact, you install it for free by going to GoToMeeting.com/twig. GoToMeeting.com/twig. Take you a minute. Before I'm done, you'll have it installed and running. Then, the next time you're on the phone, you say, here's what you do. I want to show you this. Go to GoToMeeting and let me show you. They go to GoToMeeting and boom, they're seeing your computer on their screen. And you could share documents with them. They can take control and they can show you something. You could train. It's incredible for sales presentations, product demos, training sessions. We use it here for collaboration. We use it on Maxwell's house. Ray can show us his illustrations, his screenshots. It works. And it's in real time. It's fast. I think you're going to love it. I want you to try it free. Go to meeting.com/twig. Save some time, save some money, save travel, all that stress of travel. Just use GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting.com/twig. We thank Citrix so much for supporting our show This Week in Google. Let's see. Google Voice extension for Chrome. That's interesting. Gina Trapani, is that going to be your tip? I don't want to steal your tip ahead of time.
It's not going to be my tip, but it is super cool. If you're using Chrome and Voice, definitely install this extension. Puts a little button on the top on your address bar or your status bar. I'm not actually sure what that's called in Chrome. It's called the Chrome in Firefox.
That thing. Yeah, it's not it's the Chrome in Chrome.
It's the Chrome in Chrome. But it gives you notifications when you have new messages. You can initiate calls and text messages right from that one button. Pretty sweet extension for Chrome.
I have to say, to me, that's the best reason to use an Android device is just the integration with Google Voice is so wonderful.
This integration is fantastic.
Oh, man, I don't use T-Mobile's voicemail at all. It all just is basically visual voicemail with transcription from Google Voice. Now, somebody sent me a note saying, oh, you got to stop plugging Google Voice. I can't get a... But I think they're sending out invitations now. If you ask, if you go to voice.google.com and ask for an invitation, people are apparently getting them within a day or two. And of course, once you get a Google Voice account, you have invitations too.
Yes.
And I love the idea that this is my one number. I'll never have another number and everybody can call that number. When I switch phones, it makes it so much easier. Love Google Voice.
Yeah, it's fantastic when you get a new phone for sure.
I'm a Google Voice fan.
I see people in the chat coming in offering their invites.
Oh, good.
Wasn't there a service once where you could do that, where you could start to create a market in invites?
Yeah, I think it's still around, but I can't remember the name. Yeah. There was a website where you would go and you trade. Yeah, a market. It was such a cool idea. Let me see. What other stories? France is getting involved. Good old France is getting involved in digitizing books.
And even making noises about perhaps doing it in cooperation with Google because, gosh, it is a big job.
It is a big job. In fact, they're only doing 300,000 books. Google's done millions. France, though, has committed a significant amount of money, 750 million euros, about $1 billion, to digitize its libraries and museums. And I think that's to be commended. But Google's got 10 million books. They're going to take 3 years, and they're going to get 300,000 books. So they do need some help. Wasn't France one of the chief complainers about the Google book deal? They didn't.
You could have just stopped at the word complainers.
President Nicolas Sarkozy.
That'll get me in trouble.
I love France. I'm a Francophile. My daughter lived there for a year. I go back there whenever I can, but you're not far off. Nicolas Sarkozy has vowed France will not let itself be stripped of its literary treasures. He says, in fact, he's criticized the library in Lyon for signing a Faustian pact to digitize books with Google. So I'm glad they're doing it. Look, this is absolutely, the thing to do, digitize this stuff. The problem is we have to come up with a standard so that everything is interoperable, that, you know, nobody owns it. And that's that whole
thing. It's the answer. I mean, the problem was no one was doing it. So right. Google stepped into the void and then got in trouble because it went too far. But no one was doing it.
Right.
But if them doing it motivates people to start doing it, then right. Great.
Yeah. What is the status with the Google deal? I mean, I know that are the parties talking? Are they all back at the table? I know that the original agreement is moot now.
Yeah, I'm forgetting that there was some shift that put it off for quite some time now, just because I can't remember.
But knowing Google, they're just going. They're still digitizing, right? They didn't stop.
You know, I don't know. They do have agreements in force with universities. They certainly can do any books that are out of copyright.
Right. It's the stuff in copyright and who owns that and how
it's really the orphan. Even yeah. Then, they were doing deals with you if they knew who you were. It's really the orphan works, which is, again, a fairly tiny proportion of all this.
Right. So
it was interesting that there was a story in the New York Times today that among the top sellers on the Kindle are books that are free, the top downloads, rather.
Really?
And so it had a young woman who wrote a book, and if you want to get published in a big way and get noticed, just put it on the Kindle for free, and you have a good shot of doing that. And Chris Anderson, author of Free, linked to that, arguing that it was a substantiation of his model. And so it makes you wonder that you get to the... Of course, that book is by definition digitized. But the idea that there's going to be orphan works going forward in any way is kind of limited. Again, go back to the earlier discussion. We're all creators, and we now all have links to ourselves.
Yep. I think unless you have a story that we haven't gotten to, I think it's time to move on to our tip, tool, and number. Any other stories? Going once? Going twice?
I was interested that I just saw before we got on that Google is adding, if you search for, let's say, a museum and put in hours or a restaurant and put in menu in the search bar, they say they were going to come back and give you those results directly. I couldn't get it to work.
That was my tip.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I'll shut up.
That's okay.
You got it to work.
Zip it.
And that's okay. I have others.
We need to use the Nexus One censorship. Did you notice that, by the way? That when you say the F word, for instance, in the Nexus One, to the dictation, it gives you hash, 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 hash?
Oh. No, I didn't.
Yeah, that's so funny. I'm trying to text somebody, F you, and it goes, and you can't.
I haven't tried that yet.
But what it tells me is that they're recognizing it just fine.
Yeah.
They just don't want to type it. They're apparently very prudish.
Yeah, apparently.
I think it's just for you, Leo, because it knows you're an old radio guy.
Oh, maybe that's it. It doesn't want to get me in trouble with the FCC.
Yeah.
According to Google, we filter potentially offensive or inappropriate results because we want to avoid situations whereby we might misrecognize a spoken query and return profanity. That makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
So if you said fudge and it comes back with the other F word, you
Grandma,
would...
Grandma, I love your...
Fudge. Yeah. Yeah. You know, now I'm thinking about it, that makes a lot of sense. I just thought it was funny. In fact, I sent it as it is. I thought, well, they'll know what I'm talking about.
Leo, I know you're going to talk about the multi-touch browser in a minute. I'm not going to steal your thunder, but the another way to get multi-touch, the hard way to get multi-touch, you can now root your phone and install a ROM with multi-touch that will add multi-touch to the browser and the Nexus One. And I haven't done it because Jeff has gotten to me, and I'm committed to being just a regular user who doesn't root my phone.
Right.
but the instructions are on the Twig or on the friend feed.
I would, yeah, and of course you have it on smarterware.org also, but I would be less hesitant to root my phone if I thought there were an easy way to restore it. You know, I don't mind jailbreaking the iPhone because iTunes has a built-in restore, and all you have to do is run that, and you're back to the way you were, unless you modified the radio or something. But it looks like the only way to restore the Nexus One is to use somebody's ROM that's posted on the internet and reflash it.
Yeah, and reflash it.
And
so there's no way to save a restore image, and that's interesting. So I rooted my G1, and at that time there was a way to save like the current state of your phone, but that might not be the case anymore. I'm just kind of holding out. you know, that there's good, there are a couple of good reasons to root, right? There's tethering, but you can do that with PDA Net without tethering.
And I did that.
Now there's multi-touch.
Yep.
But you know, there are more apps coming out now with multi-touch, so maybe you don't have to, you know, root for that. So
I was really tempted, but then I thought, you know, who knows what the quality of these ELLs are. And the one thing I don't want to do is have an unreliable phone because I, you know, and I when I jailbroke the iPhone, it did really impact reliability. So, you know, mm-hmm. partly that's because I have to review this and I have to give people the, I can't tell them what it's like to have a rooted one. I have to tell them what it's like to have an unrooted one.
Right,
stock
right.
phone. But also I'm just nervous. If I could restore it, I'd be much less hesitant. But also I don't feel like, you know, you could buy, I spent $30, but I bought PDA Net. I don't mind that. Far preferable to rooting it. And I will say,
before we got on tonight, I had a problem with, and I have no idea if it was the PDA Net or not, but my connection here in my hotel room was getting very confused between Ethernet 1 and EN2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's on your Mac, and I think that's a, I think you could fix that on the Mac.
Okay, but I think it was PDA Net that inserted that.
PDA Net does create a new network interface on the Mac.
Yeah, it
that's
does.
How it, works.
It does.
Yeah. Well, let's get to our tool of, I'm sorry, our tip of the week, Gina Trapani.
Sure. So the tip is, Jeff brought it up just a minute ago, in this week's This Week in Search on the Google blog, they ran down a few new search tricks, and this is just a real simple one. If you add the word hours or menu to a search for a store, organization, or restaurant, get the hours and the menu in line. So the example they give is if you search for Computer History Museum Mountain View hours, you'll see the hours of the Computer History Museum, which I highly recommend, by the way. It's an incredible place, right there in the search results. So, and if you search for, you know, a sushi joint near you and include the word menu, you'll get a link directly to the menu. Now, I tried
You don't get the menu itself then. You get a link.
No, you don't get the menu itself. You get a link. So when you do the search, you see a little snippet of a Google map. And on the right side, you see the name of the restaurant and the address and stuff. And then right below that, you'll see there's a little a light blue link menu underneath. And most of the menu searches that I tried pointed to allmenus.com.
Oh, that's interesting. So they've added all menus as a...
Yeah. I mean that's the only resource for menus I've seen, but maybe it depends.
My thought about this, Gina, was does this lead away like the thing weather in Chicago and it gives you the weather in the search box? Mm-hmm. Does this make Google more of a destination in this sense
it's
that you get full information?
Yeah.
I mean, they're definitely moving toward answering your question without ever leaving the Google interface. And there are a few other tweaks they made this week. They launched rich snippets for events, and a rich snippet will give you kind of information about days and times right there in your results.
So if you search for concerts in San Jose, you'll get actual concert listings and phone numbers to call and like who's going to perform, that kind of thing.
Right.
This is what Bing does, basically.
And now it also will provide answers to questions in line, so kind of taking on Wolfram Alpha a little bit. So I really think that Google is trying to become a destination, or at least send you direct in one click exactly to what you need, like the menu link.
Well, that's how it should do it. I think
it should.
There's little dates there.
I think that these things people don't really even notice them until.
Right.
You know, until you search for weather and say, oh, there's, you know, it's raining. Interesting, you know. So I think there's just little tweaks here and there. But the hours and menu search, I think, is especially useful for mobile searches on your phone.
I bet you most people don't even notice that anything's changed or anything. They just say, oh, yeah, that's the result I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah. As they've always gotten better with snippets, to you asked for this.
Right.
And we'll show you that portion of the Wikipedia page that has it.
Right.
They've been trying to do that for some time.
But knowing that you can add, for instance, the word hours to the search is something they need to publicize, because that changes the syntax of the search itself.
Or definitely.
And menu. And that's really, I think that's great. Googleblog.blogspot.com is kind of a must read for us every week, because Google's very good about kind of, you know, sneaking this stuff out.
Yeah, they've gotten real good about blogging about it too. I mean, they're all their blogs. I read the Gmail blog, the Voice blog, the official, the regular blog, the Reader blog. I mean, they've really every product blog is pretty active.
Yeah,
it's impressive.
I have a Google Reader folder for all the Google blogs. It's a very very good read for doing this show anyway.
And they're doing really well on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
Oh, really? They all have Twitter accounts?
Yeah, there are a lot of. There's a Nexus One Twitter account. There's a Google Wave Twitter account, and in fact, Wave launched something new this week. It was very exciting. Woo-hoo! Read only access to Waves.
Oh, finally.
With reply only access to come.
Because people were trashing Waves by just junking them up with stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So if somebody gets in your Wave and starts, you know, putting the word "not" in everybody else's sentences, you just demote them to read only. Go back and playback, copy it to a new Wave, and you're good.
Now, cool. I'm looking for, and the main Google account does not have a list. Somebody at Google needs to make a list of Google accounts, a canonical list of Google tweets. Because I'm looking at the, twitter.com/Google, and there's no list at all. This would be a good place, since you've got 2 million followers, to...
They should make a Twitter list.
Just, you know, canonical. I do that with Twit. A canonical list of Googlers, so we could find them all. There must be one somewhere. Maybe somebody will put that in the chat room if there's one.
Yeah.
I'd like to find that. Your number of the week, Mr. Jarvis.
Two numbers. The first number is 48. The next number is 2.75 billion. The founders of Google, Sergey and Larry, are going to take a metered five-year sellout of certain portion of their stock to diversify and do what people in their position do. It will, at the end of that period, at current value, they mean they get $2.75 billion in cash each. Of course, that'll change because there are also a lot of talk this week about how Google stock is very low.
All tech stocks are tanking right now.
Google's at 550, and part of this was kind of a knee-jerk reaction, some were saying. But anyway, at the end of that, they would end up with 48%, the two of them, of the voting stock. Their shares have 10 times the... voting power of common shares, but Eric Schmidt has 10% of the company. 48% is hard to get around. They're not really losing control. However, they will. The two founders will go to below majority control of voting shares
until they make an amendment to the Articles of Incorporation that give them 15%. 15 times vote.
I was just going to ask why they would do that, but is that true, Leo? Are you like they can?
Oh, they can totally do that. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you have to do it right. There's ways to do it. They make A shares, B shares, C shares, and they make a multiplier. I know because I got screwed by Paul Allen, but that's a long story. I won't even get into it. By the way,
Paul Allen got screwed by Paul Allen.
Paul Allen did it himself. I know. Can't really complain. He lost more money than I did in the deal. Comp Mike says the Google blog does in fact have a list from July anyway of Google accounts on Twitter, and there are a lot of them. There are a ton of Google accounts on Twitter, so I'll put this in the show notes. Google accounts on Twitter include Google, Google Pub Policy, Blogger, Google Books, Google Calendar, Google Contacts, Google Images, Google News, on and on and on and on and on. There's geo-related, ad-related, it's about 20 ad-related, developer and technical-related. There's people. And there's even regional. It looks like
what's the special in the restaurant today tweet?
Oh, that would be good. I'd like that. Let's see. Now, that must be that's somewhere else, I guess. Google at work, Google Sites, Google Toolbar. Wow, look at that. And I guess even though this article was posted in July, it's apparently they're adding all the time because they have an asterisk next to new ones.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's great. Good to know. I will make I'll make a list on my site of all of them, a Google list.
Yeah, good idea.
So 2.75 billion each. That's nice. Must be nice. Wow. I mean, it's kind of a staggering number.
They could each buy a jet now.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about the Nexus One, probably ad nauseum for some of you, but we all use a Nexus One phone. And, you know, I mean, I have to say, I'm using exclusively and no desire to go back to the iPhone. And
Jeff sort of begrudgingly, but we're working on him.
We've had to bribe, cajole, threaten him, but we've managed to convince him to not turn it in yet.
No, I didn't turn it in, but the iPhone is still my number one.
That's okay.
In my heart.
That's okay. our Gina and my contention is you just have to use this enough to really, you know, get to know it. And I think people come around. I'm just loving it. I almost am too much in love with it. I spend a lot of time. Special time, just me and the phone.
You're caressing it right now.
Just
with the video
me
wheel.
And the phone. So, but one of the big complaints, and it really is a big complaint, is that multi-touch, while it's in the hardware and it's in the operating system, is not in any of the Google apps. And it seems like a huge thing to leave out. And it really is. When you go to the gallery, you just want to pinch and zoom
the pictures, and you can't. They just don't go anywhere. But I did find a very good upgrade to the browser. Now, one thing you have to commend Google for, go ahead and try to change the default browser on the iPhone. You can't.
But
it's easy to do, just as on it would be on Windows or the Mac, to have a different default browser. And I am really happy with this one. It's called the Dolphin browser. It's been around since September. The newest version just came out. Supports multi-touch absolutely. Now there's a free version that is ad supported, but I paid a couple of bucks to get the full version. It's probably using the same engine. It's a very competent browser. It seems to be exactly the same as the Google browser, except watch, I can pinch, I can zoom. It's a smart. It reformats very nicely after you do the pinch. I have to say, it's a really nice browser. It has a lot of nice features, including gestures. It has a built-in little magnifying glass. I can see the page as a whole. It also has great sharing features in it. It has a home page that I kind of like that gives you access to all the Google features kind of natively on the home page, a very good bookmarking facility. It has a read later feature, which isn't Instapaper, but it's kind of like the idea of you save the articles into one folder. Good, delicious integration. It's a very nice browser. It's called the Dolphin browser. And I'm using it. You totally can say you are the default browser. It has a huge number of setting capabilities. I mean, there's all sorts of settings built into this thing. So very happy with it. And highly recommend it if you want to assure yourself that, in fact, it is possible to do multi-touch on the Nexus One. And I'm told this works as well on the Droid. Yes, you can. And all you have to do is change the software. And this is the one I recommend. It's the Dolphin browser. You can find it in the Android marketplace. It's also themeable, although I haven't changed the theme. I like a kind of simple theme. A lot of nice features built into it.
And I'm downloading this right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's great for when people say, oh, yeah, nice Nexus One. If it only had multi-touch, and you can whip it out and say, look. And I think that reassures people. And
we have that in Maps. That makes a big difference.
You got to get it in Maps and Gallery. And it's, right now you have to root, as far as I know, to do that. But I'm sure that I have to think Google at some point is going to make that shift. It's available in Europe. I don't know why it's not available here. And as long as we're talking about applications, I know you're using Seismic, you guys, for your Twitter application. I mentioned that Handmark's got a new one. But I really, and I would encourage anybody who ever used Twidroid Pro to go back and re-examine it, because it has now become not only a very competent Twitter client, but I think a better Twitter client than even Tweety or Simple Tweet, or Bird Feed, all of which I've used on the iPhone. I really like this one. I've been using it very heavily, and it has a black theme, which is very important if you're using the Nexus One, because that OLED screen gives you better battery life with dark backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Doesn't use any energy to do a black pixel on OLED. But, the speediness of this is just, of the Nexus One, is just fantastic.
You're in love, Leo.
I am. It's my new...
You are. It's great. I'm going to revisit Twidroid. I'm going to give Twidroid another chance.
I would give it... I'd be very curious what you think. Because, I went to Seismic, but it's simple. Twidroid, for instance, has the ability to have multiple... And this is important to me because I have multiple Twitter accounts. Oops, let's go back here. Mm-hmm. And it handles it. I think it handles it quite well. So I'm in my main account. That's the default account. But if I want to go to another account, I just slide sideways. And now it has a unified inbox, by the way, all accounts, which is mm-hmm. very handy. And then account by account, I can go through here like this. And if you want to follow somebody, you press and hold them. Mm-hmm. And then it says follow, and it gives you the chance. Oh, I guess I'm already following them. But it gives you the chance to choose which account you want to follow them in. So it handles multiple accounts very nicely.
How about list support? Can I view just a list?
Yep.
Yeah, that Seismic apparently has that, but every time I try to look at just a list, I get a connection error. Like no matter what kind of connection I have, wherever I am.
Let me try.
So I feel like it's a Seismic problem.
I have to go to an account that has lists. Wait a minute, let me go to my my main account. But if you go to an account that has lists, you pull up the main menu and it says View Lists. Oh, these are lists I'm subscribed to. Okay, so I need to search for lists in other people's profiles. Okay. And then you can subscribe to or look at the lists. It has trends. Very nice job with trends, I think. I think they've done a good job. Although trends have gotten really stupid on Twitter. Really pathetic. I am proud to say that Twitter has redone the suggested user list, and I am now not only verified, but I am suggested in their
Congratulations. I saw that.
What did it do to your followers?
Nothing. And that's fine. Actually, that's good. Dave Weiner wrote a letter to Twitter's board saying, get me off that. But it's not like the old SUL where you join and then you got a pre-selected a bunch of them and you just press OK. There's 20 lists. They did it right this time where there's categories. You pick a category you're interested in. There's a large number of people in each category. It's a much more sensible way of doing it. Nobody's going to get a million followers just from being on it. And I think that's fine.
A good thing. It's a feature.
It's a discovery tool, which is as it should be. We are out of time. I can't believe it. You must go back to your... It's not pizza night now in Munich. It's...
Schlaf.
It's bedtime.
Schlaf night.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have some schlaf.
I went to the sauna in the hotel, and I went to a party.
Oh,
and
have then
fun. I came here, and then I'm going to go to sleep.
Is schlaf sleep?
Mein Schlafzimmer. Das hier sehen.
Ja.
Oh,
it's beautiful. Look at that.
It's a nice hotel. It's called the Charles Hotel here in Munich. It's a new hotel. The conference put me up at. It's very nice.
Oh, very nice. Well, enjoy your stay in Germany, and then we'll talk to you next week in Switzerland at Davos.
I hope if all works well, I'm supposed to be the lone guy as the big soiree goes on the last night of Davos. I, poor me, sacrificing for the purposes of Twig, will be in the press room broadcasting.
Oh, don't do that.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll be tired by then. It's fine.
All right. Will you be wearing black tie? Because if so, Gina and I can dress up.
I'll be wearing a black tie.
Okay. I've got to wear a tuxedo just to make it feel like you're not missing the glamour.
Me getting dressed up is me not wearing a t-shirt, so.
Oh, come on, Gina. I know you've got a closet full of ball gowns. Don't deny it.
Oh, yeah.
Wait. I want to see the Manolo Blahniks, Gina.
Now those I'm sure she doesn't. All right. Hey, thank you, everybody. Gina Trapani blogs at smarterwear.org. It's a must read every day. Great stuff there. And, of course, Lifehacker and Harvard Business Review and many other places. And follow her on Flickr. That's where you'll see squished cubs and submarine photos from her recent travels with the Navy. She's been traveling around with the Navy.
Well done. Bloggers, we get around.
The first female submariner, Dina Trapani, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Jarvis is, when he's not in Germany, is hanging out at the Buzz Machine, buzzmachine.com. Also, professor of journalism at the City University of New York Journalism School, and of course many other things. Let's say the Guardian podcasts. Letter from the U.S.?
No, that's Media Talk USA.
Media Talk USA, that's it. Guardian.co.uk
/ Media Talk USA.
And thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.